Okay, so this might be a stupid question, but I like to ask the stupid questions because if I have the question, someone else might have it. You guys have each, I think, mentioned the report to Congress more than once. What exactly are we reporting to Congress? What's in that report? What's
Very
and
good
what what
question. Yes.
and what is that? What is that doing for me as a dairy farmer?
So I just got to ask, if I look at my last milk check, I'm going to say promotion is terrible.
That is
So,
a
and you just said that's what we look at.
All right. Hello, hello, hello. My name is Jess Peters, and I'm a dairy farmer from Pennsylvania. And I'm welcoming you to another episode of the Dairy Checkoff podcast. I am co-hosting today with Larry Hancock, who is a dairy farmer from Texas. We're going to be hosting a discussion today on the value of checkoff and how it's measured. And we have two people here who are going to help us answer those questions. The first is Lucas Lench, who is the Chief Federation Officer at Dairy Management Incorporated, the National Dairy Checkoff. Hi, Lucas.
Hey, good afternoon. Great to be with you.
We're glad to have you. And we also have Peter Vitaliano, VP at National Milk Producers Federation on Economic Policy and Market Research. Hello.
Hello, good to be with you this afternoon.
Well, we are going to be talking to you guys about how the Dairy Checkoff and the USDA measure the value of checkoff programs for driving dairy sales and consumer trust. And as a dairy farmer, I know this is a question I've had because I pay checkoff. And I want to know if I'm getting my money's worth and where that money is going. So, right off the bat, how do we measure the value of checkoff? How does USDA measure it? And how do those differ?
Well, from the very beginning of the checkoff legislation, there's been a requirement that the program be statistically evaluated for its effectiveness every year. And that is handled by USDA working under contract with various researchers at mostly land-grant universities.
Larry and Jessica, as you think about the role that USDA plays as an oversight, but we on an ongoing basis as Checkoff live in the market every year, and the valuation of programming is actually also real time on an internal review with farmers and the national board looking over the shoulder of the staff on the strategies that we are employing and the tactics of the relationships that we're bringing to life, frankly, the partnerships and say food service companies, those we evaluate on the merits of real-time results. And again, what the USDA and that outside report to Congress, that there's some terminology that sometimes we can get clunked up on, like return on investment or benefit cost ratio. I think that's a really important a discernment that we need to provide for our listening audience is what's the difference? And sometimes we throw ROI around as a terminology, return on investment. But to be clear, Peter, help me out here. That report to Congress is not an ROI. It really is specific to a benefit cost ratio. And can you help us understand the difference?
That's what it is called. And I guess the simple definition that comes right out of the study itself is the economic return in dollars to every $1 invested by stakeholders in promotion. Now, I'm not as much of a stickler for the, it seems like that is a concept that's fairly close to return on investment. In other words, you put so many dollars, it's like you buy a bond. You pay $100 for a bond that pays 5% interest, and you get back $105 at the end of that period, say the year. The analysis is done with what's called time series, where they need data over a number of years. And promotion has two effects that gives those benefit cost ratios that we'll review subsequently. They increase the consumption of dairy products. That's the fundamental purpose of the promotion program. The promotion program does not have an explicit directive to raise prices. It has the directive and the mission to increase promotion of dairy products in domestic and international markets. But in so doing, if the program is effective in increasing promotion, it will have the effect of increasing prices, not permanently, but in an ongoing basis where you put more consumption pressure on the available supply. It'll move prices up to encourage more production. And in turn, you want to keep the promotion going. Now, there are two ways you can look at it. The benefit cost ratio could be the total return, which is any price increase, times the additional sales. In other words, the growth of the entire revenue to dairy farmers, both in price and quantity, which is what I suspect the whole thing is. For an individual farmer like Jessica, who says she wants to, and Larry, who want to know what it's doing for them, you may not be as interested. I mean, you should be, as dairy leaders, you should be interested in how much it's growing consumption, because that drives your price. But ultimately, what matters on your farm is not how much the pie is growing for everybody, because the important part of the pie to you is the size of your milk supply. If you're growing your herd or keeping it steady, you want to know what it's doing to your price, your little slice of that whole revenue increase. And in the sense that how much your price has gone up as a result of that increase measured by the benefit cost ratio.
I just got to ask, if I look at my last milk check, I'm going to say promotion is terrible.
And
you just said that's what we look at. So
that's a common thing.
I don't know
thing.
That I agree with you 100%, but
promotion is not the only thing that drives your price. I mean, look at what happened last year where your price went bonkers over all kinds of disruptions in the market. The supply of milk affects that. The competition from other products, which has been a key thing in what's been happening in fluid milk, for example. All of those things, incomes, when we have a recession, people buy less dairy products. All of those things affect the price of milk, the supply and demand for milk. And promotion is just one of those things that rides in that big mix. So promotion could be very effective at a time when prices are in the tank, because all these other factors are working against you. I know that's very difficult for a farmer, because you don't see those other things, but you see the 15 cents on your check and you see your price. So you see what you're investing only in promotion, not all those other things. And so you say, if promotion is so good, why is my price, so terrible? And again, you have to look at it over a long, long period of time. And the analysis in the report to Congress is a way of technically separating those things out so that you're looking at the effect of promotion, even if it's riding, somewhat subtly on top of a whole bunch of other changing things that may be negative for price at any one time. But just like the last couple of years, I mean, last year's prices and direct payments, we could have been done a lot worse during the pandemic. But you remember the period from 2015 to half of 2019, not very good. But 2013, 2014, Larry, you're smiling.
They're wonderful.
Because you're going to tell your grandkids about those years. It comes both ways. It's never, you're not going to keep prices up forever under our basically open marketing system.
Okay, so this might be a stupid question, but I like to ask the stupid questions, because if I have the question, someone else might have it. You guys have each, I think, mentioned the report to Congress more than once. What exactly are we reporting to Congress? What's in that report? What's
very good.
And what is that doing for me as a dairy farmer?
The report to Congress is an annual report, again, mandated by the Promotion Act. The promotion is based on a law that was passed in 1983. And that law permits producers, if they vote to do so, to impose a national order on themselves, which mandates the 15-cent assessment. Prior to that, you had a bunch of regional organizations, but it was kind of voluntary. The current checkoff program unified that at a national level. And again, part of that requirement is a report, annual report to Congress. I could look up and tell you how many pages the most recent one was. But there are a number of chapters that just give straight descriptions of the program, talk about what the programs have done over the past year, and a number of other things. There's only one chapter three in each one, that is this specific quantitative evaluation. You know, what is the benefit cost ratio of the promotion programs have achieved. But there's a lot more besides that. And it's not heavy reading. And I would recommend that every dairy farmer that pays checkoff should read that, because that tells you a lot about your program.
Yeah, and quite easily, it's just even putting in your Google search, USDA dairy report to Congress, and you'll go right to it. So Jess, do we answer your question? Basically, the act and the order requires that report back to Congress. Are you looking for a little bit more context around what does that actually mean in the halls of Congress?
Maybe a little bit more. I guess the relevance of the report, I suppose the way I take it is it's USDA's way of, dairy farmers are paying into this. It's kind of their way of checking you and making sure you're spending our money in a reputable way. I guess is kind of what I'm taking it. It's like their checks and balances. Is that right?
Well, the latest report technically was published in November 2020, but it only covered the programs through 2018. Now there's going to be a lag. You have to wait till the whole year is completed, get the data to do the analysis, get all the information to do the write-up on those other chapters. So it usually takes a while. I would expect that it would easily take at least, you know, a good part of a year after that year closes to do the report. So by that measure, last November doing 2018 is probably about a year later. That could have been, and I don't know the details, but my guess is that could have included programs all the way up through 2019, published 10 months, 11 months later. But I'm not privy to all the details that go into how long it takes to put that whole report together.
My thoughts are anything with the government, that's pretty quick. You know,
you've been talking a lot about the promotion that Checkoff does. And I think one of the things that frustrates farmers the most is, one, not seeing the result in our milk check, as Larry, everything we do on the farm comes back to our milk check. But two, also, I think a lot of farmers don't actually see the promotion Checkoff is doing. And I don't, you know, I hear all the time, and I'm just as an advocate online, I don't see billboards. I don't see commercials on TV. You know, where is our money going? What promotion are you doing, and how effective is it?
You know, Jessica, that's a great question. And, I think one of the things to keep in mind is if you think about consumers and where they're located, and if you look around your farm, you may be close to an urban center, you may not be, but by and large, most of our consuming public are someplace other than ag country. And when you think about billboards, who's driving by that? That might make a farmer feel good if they see something on a billboard that by where they live. But at the end of the day, our marketing, our partners, we're really joining partnerships, and our approach to this business is really going where consumers are. And it might sound a little silly, but to say it this way, if you're not seeing some of the advertising in the digital channels, the answer is it's because you're not the demographic that we're targeting. But those, I can, you trust me when I say we are in that space digitally, working through reaching Generation Z, what we also have called the conflicted health seeker. Now, there's some very clear demographics that we are targeting and going after, and we're out there going after that marginal conflicted health seeker and helping them make a choice if they have that moment of truth in the retail aisle, and they're saying, do I pick this alternative or do I pick this trusted dairy beverage? I'm going to pick the trusted dairy beverage because some of that marketing got through to me.
So another thing I hear a lot from dairy farmers, we see a lot of advertising from milk alternatives. I have a hard time calling it almond milk. I'd like to call it almond juice. But I think we were a very passionate group of dairy farmers are. And one thing we want to see is they're, it almost feels like they're attacking us. And we want to know, or a lot of farmers wonder why Checkoff isn't or can't attack back. Do you know what I mean? On our behalf. You know, I'm sure there are rules about that, you know, why aren't we fighting back?
That is a great question. And yes, your first response is one of the things that Dairy Checkoff as a through its act and order, and as we're governed by farmers, we still have to be regulated by USDA oversight. And to disparage any other food or food and beverage is something we're not allowed to do. But information is our friend, and a consuming public, you know, one of the things we always have to keep in mind is when you're trying to take on the dairy industry, and all you have to do to gain market share is to create doubt. People attack us from all edges. And, you know, as an industry leader, we are in a spot where consumer confidence is high. We're in 97% of all the grocery carts out there in some form or fashion. And when you see that advertising, they're trying to break through and get into that market share. That's not going to go away. It's only going to likely increase. More and more competition is going to come after. And really, they want to knock off the king of the hill, and that being dairy, they want part of that market share. So the attacks are going to keep coming. That is a reality. But for us, our ability to respond is really in science, it's in truth, and it's not in from an emotional reaction, but one from a trusted science-based response.
It's fighting back really requires a team effort, because as Lucas says, the Checkoff itself can't directly go after sort of the alternatives. But there are a lot of policy issues involved in that, and National Milk is a policy organization, and we are fighting back. We have been browbeating the Food and Drug Administration that has not been enforcing its own regulations for years, because they figure it's not a health issue, it's just a standards issue. But regulations prohibit the labeling of anything with the word milk, for example, that is not from a cow, or at least from a bovine animal. And so these alternatives that call themselves almond milk and the like are violating those standards.
We could take two more podcasts talking about dairy alternatives, but I want to bring it back just for a minute. And that's, our Checkoff is 15 cents. And it's not one. It goes to state and regions and to national. Are those not managed? Are those measured the same way?
Yes. In fact, because all those different promotion programs are operating at the same time, the analysis tends to look at the totality of money that's being spent. They separate it out into the DMI unified program expenditures. They include the milk PEP expenditures because they're operating in there on fluid along with the DMI. And then the state and regional, the approved programs are a third batch.
Yeah, so the milk PEP, milk processor education program, it's all the white, basically the white fluid milk that is produced in the country. Those processors pay their own Checkoff on that. You know, as far as the state and local, there's a thing called qualified programs. Yeah. And all of the qualified programs that USDA oversees is not necessarily all of the programs that roll up under our our unified marketing plan. And I just want to point this out. There is one national dairy board, and that national nickel of that 15 cents flows through the national dairy board. And then there are the rest of the qualified programs across the country, of which there are 16 state and regional systems. And of those 16, essentially 14 of those state and regions pay into the Federation, which is the United Dairy Industry Association. And they are contributing dollars that jointly invest in partnerships, programming nationally and locally. And the rest of that Federation, the state level and regional level, they are taking that unified marketing plan that they've helped create, and they're out there implementing it. Best example I can come at you with locally is there are no national schools, quote unquote. They're all local. Just like farmers are a local zip code, so are schools. And we need the staff out across the country to implement programming in order to continue to have trust and confidence in dairy, working alongside of the USDA dietary guidelines. So that would be one example of how that work comes to life.
Lucas, you specifically mentioned consumer confidence in part of the discussion. And that's kind of a new thing, I think. How do we measure that you're gaining consumer trust through checkoff programs? I mean, one way I do it online is, you know, there are farmers actually advocating online directly to consumers through social media. How are you measuring if and how we're gaining consumer trust?
You bet. Well, if you think about market segmentation, it really comes down to a quantitative analysis of when we start something and when we finish a campaign. And that idea of that measurement starts when we do, if we're implementing, like most recently, Undeniably Dairy was a campaign that we moved to really make sure that consumers were tracking, hey, they could trust foods from dairy, they could trust farmers, and that in order to know that we had progress on that front, there was that evaluation of the marketplace with polling, knowing the demographics of who we were targeting and where they fell with the results of those initial responses. Let's say, go back to that conflicted health seeker as a category term that we worked with. And then over the course of a year or two, we check back in and we evaluate a random sample of consumers that fit into that bucket, and we see how we're doing with them. And so that's truly a quantitative analysis that allows us to see, are we moving the needle in a correct direction? And that's just a very simple way of saying, when you have a random sample of a group across the country that is very much your target audience, have you moved their sentiment on key things that we're thinking about? So that's one way that we can evaluate trust. Other ways is, frankly, you know, product sales and return of consumers to certain products, you know, and how do they move along the path of supporting something? Do they try it once and they're one and done? Or do they become a brand advocate and you could see the repeat sales? And do they ultimately become a brand champion that's out there telling their friends and families to buy a product? And that's how you can see consumer confidence in certain brands as well.
That brings up another point that in addition to the, you know, we've been talking about the technical quantitative report in the annual report to Congress. But there's besides that more fancy statistical analysis, there are all kinds of good data and good that tell a story about, as Lucas said, how consumers are increasing their confidence, increasing their consumption of dairy products. One of my favorites is looking at what's been happening over almost 100 years of butter consumption per capita, which had been in decline until, you know, since literally 100 years ago, until recent decades. And thanks to DMI-funded research, which has added to the changed perception of consumption of dietary fats, has been on the upswing, again, almost for the first time in 100 years. I mean, those things are not just accidents. You can just look at some of that data and say, wow, something's going right here.
You know, Peter, we don't talk near enough about this. I may not be drinking as much milk as I used to, but boy, I'm sure eating it. And as a country, we're at an all-time high per capita consumption of dairy foods. And I would say, as we're looking at the trends going forward, that's only growing. And there's a lot to celebrate in that. And I don't think we celebrate it near enough, because I think sometimes we associate the value of what is raised on my farm in the bulk tank going for processing. There's an emotional connection of what that product looks like to what the consumer is drinking or eating. And I think dairy as a beverage is one way of looking at it, but dairy as an ingredient is another way of thinking about your dairy profile, if you will, of where your products hit the marketplace.
That's, I couldn't have said it better myself, Lucas. The food industry is changing rapidly, and many foods are now becoming ingredients in other foods, and dairy is no exception. I mean, look what's happened in the whey complex, where you used to dump whey on your fields or put it down a sewer somewhere, and now it's basically manufactured into a whole host of value-added products, goes into nutritional products, et cetera. The growth of exports is a tremendous success story that the Czech office had a role in. And for years and years, and it's still the case, about 80% of the total milk equivalent, or milk solids as I measure it, in that goes to exports are still ingredients, dry, you know, basically non-fat dry milk, all those different whey products, lactose. That's what gets imported by dairy deficit countries, where it's often reconstituted into a whole host of consumer products.
You know, I'm just a farmer, so I'll probably never read the report to Congress. If it's more than a paragraph long, it's probably more than I'll read. But I'm an advocate of promotion. And the way I look at it is probably very simple is, you know, I try really hard to manage my herd, and I hope to increase my production by 1.5-2% every year, which nationally we've always done that, usually over that. And that's without adding a lot of animals. That's just improving my herd. And so far we've been able to handle all that milk. You know, all that growth is sold. It's not being stored like it used to be in my olden days when I first started, stored in a cave somewhere in Kentucky. It's actually being sold. And I think that's a good, talks real good of the checkoff and the spending of the dollars. It's interesting to hear about how we measure that. And I'm sure that it's measured in lots of ways. Each time a plan is put in place, that plan is measured. So there's a lot of measurements. So I think you've done a good job explaining it. For the report to Congress, I go back to what you said at first. Do we trust that report? Peter, do you trust that report?
Yeah, it's the best information there is. I've been following those evaluations for years and years, and with other commodities. I'm going to get a little technical here. Dairy products tend to be price inelastic, so that means the demand is such that a little bit of effort in boosting consumption can have a big effect on prices. If dairy wasn't that way, the promotion wouldn't be as effective. So you've got an industry that is ripe for promotion activities to be effective.
I think one of the things that's really incredible about that is that farmers continue to provide the oversight. And, you know, we that work in dairy checkoff and promotion and research, it's an honor to work for farmers. And when a farmer is looking over our shoulder at a board meeting, asking the questions about value, how are we making progress? I distill it down into a simple phrase, and that's really the definition of value added. And the hope and the desire that we are getting a value-added proposition in front of our farmers. And that is, definition being, would you miss us if we're gone? And then you could twist it a little bit and say, would you miss this program if it was gone? Or would you miss this body of work if it was gone? If we didn't have U.S. Dairy Export Council, would you miss it? If we didn't have Nutrient, would you miss it? If we didn't have the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, bringing all of the brands together, companies together in a pre-competitive way to work on issues facing our industry. You know, and I think that the answer is we hold ourselves accountable to a high standard, and we better be value added. We better be making a difference. And one of the great things about having farmers close to this is we make adjustments real time in the year that we're in. We don't wait around for a report to Congress for us to make a decision to change something. That's a lagging indicator of success. We are all about the present and the future.
I don't know. I think that's a good place to stop. On behalf of dairy farmers, I want to say thank you to you, like Checkoff and your programs and you guys, because I know we're a hard group to get a foothold with. And it's just been so many years of not having good milk prices or input prices constantly going up and profits never following them, that we're very skeptical of where and how we spend our money. And you know, that 15 cents doesn't seem like a lot of money, but the fact that it's constantly there always has us questioning, you know. And I think Lucas made the point that we feel like we don't see that money in promotion because we're not the ones being promoted to. But I think I agree that if you weren't there, we would miss you. We just don't know that. Larry, what do you think?
I agree. I think Lucas summed it up really well. I think the board questions everything and tries to make the best use of the money. There are times when we try something and it doesn't succeed, but I hope everybody expects that because we're always trying to make sure we're making a difference. And I think Checkoff does that. It makes a difference. And you did a good job, Jess. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. So did you, Larry. And thanks to Lucas and Peter for this conversation on the value of Checkoff. I know I learned some things and had a few confusions cleared up. And it was just really fun talking to you guys today. My first hosting gig. I might go into business now.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you for representing America's dairy farmers in this discussion too. It's great to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
And I want to thank everyone for hanging out with us and listening to what we have to say. And if you want to hear more about different issues affecting the dairy industry, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform like Stitcher or Spotify or iTunes. I know I use Spotify. Or you can check out our website at dairycheckoffpodcast.com for future episodes.